I talked about 4 points that I believe we have to manage as we live in the unshakable kingdom. We have to manage information, we have to manage observation, we have to manage implication, and we have to manage the application. Say with me, information. Information. Say it a little louder, information. Information. Observation. Observation. Implication. Implication. And the application. I believe it's these four areas oftentimes that can be challenging for us so that we remain in a place of faith even while things around us are looking strange. Now, one of the things that I've been talking about is how that we can find ourselves in a night season. This is what I talked about last week, but it's not dark everywhere. It's not dark everywhere. And even when you find yourself in a season where you're trying to figure it out, God's not trying to figure it out with you. Sometimes we can become anxious when we don't realize or we recognize or remind ourselves that while it may be foreign to you, it's not foreign to God. While you're working through it, he's not working through it. He's already worked it out. Say, he's already worked it out. And so one of the passages that I've been talking about or using as an example is when God brought Israel, the children of Israel, when he brought them out of Egypt. And in Exodus 14 and verse 8, it said, God made Pharaoh, king of Egypt, stubborn, determined to chase the Israelites as they walked out on him without even looking back. And we know the story of how God worked to deliver them. One of the things that I said last week that's worth noting again is there were 10 plagues that took place. Say 10 plagues. There were 10 plagues that happened, and I believe about the third or fourth plague, I believe Pharaoh was really ready to let them go. But what we see in God's sovereign hand is it says God kept hardening his heart. God kept hardening his heart. It's amazing now to think about this because, listen to me, there are times when you and I can be praying for deliverance or, you know, can you get me off of that job or whatever it is, and he ain't getting you off that job. He's not moving you out of that place because what God is doing in you isn't just about you. What God is doing in me isn't just about me. He's multifaceted. Okay, he's a multitasking God. While he's here with us, he's doing something right now in Singapore. He's doing something right now in South Africa. He's doing something right now in Asia. He's doing something right now in Europe. God is moving everywhere. And my intention is to keep before us how big and how great our God is. Because in the midst of things shaking right now, be it in our nation or you may be feeling like it's shaking on a more personal level, you've got to manage the information. You've got to be able to manage observation, what you're looking at, what you see. You've got to be able to manage the implication of it, meaning a possible future effect or result of what it is you're looking at or you're hearing. And then you've got to deal with the application of it, the act of putting something in use. How does it fit? How can it be used? Does it fit or should it fit at all? I believe sometimes we get challenged or we get anxious about things because there's the misapplication or the misapplication because we've not understood the implication of a situation. When information comes to you and I, as believers in the kingdom of God, you and I should always take that and line it up with kingdom. Line it up with kingdom. We deal with the information. We deal with the observation, a statement about something you have noticed, a comment or remark, something you noticed by watching or listening. But in all of that, those who have a kingdom perspective recognize that God is moving. They recognize that there is another kingdom in operation. That's the kingdom you and I live in. And the more we can live out of that place, now I'm not talking about being so heavenly minded that you have no earthly good. I'm talking about being in a place that everything you look at is out of that perspective. It keeps you and I from doubting God. that God is in it, that God is somehow moving in it, that somehow God is using it. We all deal with challenges. We will all deal with struggles. Jesus said, you're going to have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I've overcome the world. His victory has become your victory. His victory has become my victory. And so the key is for us to walk in it. Now, the more you are able to identify with the workings and dealings of God through history and the scriptures, it helps you to be able to have a perspective that should ultimately or have an effect on how you walk out your faith. Meaning that when you're able to, for the believer, not only see what he did, but be able to know why he did it, that should set you in a different place than the unbeliever relative to the things that are going on. And so one of the things that I did, I was looking at this passage in Exodus 14 of how they found themselves coming to the Red Sea. When they get to the Red Sea, you'll remember that in the midst of that, now the people are upset. The people are upset. What are they dealing with? They're dealing with information. They're dealing with observation. And now they're dealing with what they believe to be the implications of all of it. As a matter of fact, it's just the nature of people who haven't grown up and haven't matured. That they can look at something and they begin to doubt and they begin to fear and they begin to pass blame. So God delivers them, and it says this, I'm reading, this is from the Message Bible. It says, as Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up and saw them Egyptians coming at them, and they were totally afraid. They cried out in terror to God. They told Moses, weren't the cemeteries large enough in Egypt so that you had to take us out here in the wilderness to die? What have you done to us, taking us out of Egypt? Back in Egypt, didn't we tell you this would happen? Didn't we tell you, leave us alone here in Egypt? We're better off as slaves in Egypt than as corpses in the wilderness. Now, I'm just telling you, that's a sad place for those who just saw what God did through 10 plagues. That's a sad place to be in for those who came out with the spoils, those that came out with the stuff. It says they plundered the Egyptians, and yet in this moment, they're all shook up. I'm talking about you and I being able to live victoriously in an unshakable kingdom. And so what I did was I was reading this, and I began to think about how that what God did for them to get them there. And what they're not recognizing and what you and I sometimes need to be reminded of is that we are a part of the fulfillment of God's word that is passed down through generations. Say generations. Passed down through generations. So if you can grab a hold of that, then you won't get stuck on just what's happening right now. Believe it when I tell you, you're a part of a bigger picture. You're a part of a bigger plan. So if I was to take a moment and just kind of rewind for a little bit. Let's rewind from Exodus 14 all the way back to Genesis 15. It's kind of like there's a movie out called Vantage Point. Any of you ever seen that movie Vantage Point? Okay. It's a movie about this attack that takes place, and a leader is assassinated, and a bomb goes off, and the whole movie is about the various people who saw it from different vantage points, and how at the end of the movie, how all of their lives played a part in how this thing ended. Okay, say vantage point. Say perspective. Come on, say perspective. Now, that's why I will keep pushing. You've got to live out of a kingdom perspective. You've got to live out of a kingdom perspective. So real quick, let me just walk you through this. If you're taking notes, you can just write the scriptures down and study them for yourselves. But I found myself asking the question, how is God viewing this, having brought them to this place of the Red Sea? Now, by now, the children of Israel should be in a place like, okay, now we saw what God did with the plagues. He got us out. He brought us out rich. So let's see what he's going to do next. That's not where they went. But if they understood God and things and how God operates, God is about fulfilling his covenant. God is about fulfilling his promise. God is about fulfilling his word. That's why when you have a word from God, you stand on that word and you continue to stand on that word no matter what. Stay with that word. As a matter of fact, in 2 Peter 1, 19 and 20 through 21, I read this last week. So we have the prophetic word made sure, to which you do well to pay attention as to a lamp shining in a dark place until the day dawns and the morning star arises in our hearts. Meaning, until you have light to illuminate, allow the word to be the light. Excuse me. Allow the word to be the thing that keeps you going. What God is fulfilling is his word, his covenant, that goes all the way back to Genesis 15. Now, I'm just reading these passages so we can move through this very quickly. It's in Genesis 15, 13 through 15. It says this, God said to Abram, know for certain. I like that. God says, know for certain. He means you can take this to the bank. He says, know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, where they will be enslaved and oppressed 400 years. Say 400 years. But I will also judge the nation whom they will serve, and afterward they will come out with many possessions. They will be there 400 years, but I will judge the nation whom they will serve, and afterwards they will come out with many possessions. What is he talking about? What God is talking about is they are going to be enslaved in Egypt. They're going to be enslaved in Egypt. Now, was that God's intent originally? No. But here's the thing. God knows all things. What he unfolds to us is to help us know. That's why when Jesus was speaking in John chapter 16, and he says this, behold, the hour is coming and has already come for you to be scattered each to his own home to leave me alone. Yet I will not be alone because the Father is with me. And then he says this, these things I have spoken to you so that you may have peace. Now what? Now you're just telling us this thing's about to get crazy. But you're telling us so we can have peace? He's saying, yes, I'm telling you. So when it happens, you will not be shook up. You will not be shaken like everybody else. And if you and I will spend time in the presence of God and in his word, guess what? You have an understanding about the times in which we live right now. I don't care whether it's in the White House or an outhouse or anywhere. You'll understand what's going on with the times, and you can be at peace in the midst of it because you and I are part of the unshakable kingdom. Now, what God is declaring to Abraham is this, I'm establishing my covenant with you. That's what Genesis 15 is all about. But he's also letting him know, but some things are going to happen. He says, but know this, at the end of the 400 years, I'm going to come and get them. I'm going to come and get them, and they're going to leave out blessed. Now, here's God's plan unfolding. And I need you to hear this, that no matter where you're at, if you're born again, the Bible says this, and I was talking with one of our leaders about it, where it says, the steps of a righteous man are ordered by the Lord. The steps of a righteous man are ordered by the Lord. But the key is a righteous man, someone who's in right standing, someone who's in right standing. Because you see, you can make all the choices you want to make yourself, okay? But if you have aligned yourself with God, guess what? Then your choices are going to be aligned with his. The steps of a righteous man are ordered by the Lord. And so God is moving even though you may not understand how it's all going to come together. Now, he says 400 years to get to this place. So when we rewind back from at the Red Sea all the way back to Abraham where the covenant is established. Now we know about the covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. Say Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. Now, remember though what God says to Jacob. Remember, he says to Jacob, don't go down to Egypt. Don't you go down to Egypt. You stay here in this land and I will bless you. And I love what it says there. And I was with a leader this past Friday at a banquet. We were sitting and talking and we were just talking about what God's doing. And he says, you know what? He says, I just see you as one sowing right now in the midst of famine. He said, but you're going to reap 100-fold. He said, I see you sowing in the midst of famine. I see you sowing in the midst of famine. He said, but you keep sowing because you're going to reap 100-fold. Some of you are sowing in the midst of famine, but you're going to reap 100-fold. Exponentially. Quickly. Okay, so for the three of y'all that got that, God bless you. I didn't say 400 years. I didn't say 400 years. But whatever the amount of time is, there's grace for it. Hold on to the word. Hold on to the blessing. Hold on to it. Hold on to it. Hold on to it. I'm talking to some of y'all that are about to give up right now. You're just ready to go to plan B. In God, there is no plan B. In God, there is no plan B. In God, there is no plan B. There is no plan B. There's not, what if it doesn't work? I'm going to do this. When he sent Jesus, he didn't have another son lined up waiting just in case Jesus changed his mind. I'm talking to you right now. I'm talking to you right now. He said to Jacob, look, I want to establish for you what I established with your daddy and your daddy's daddy. He said, the same covenant I'm going to manifest with you. But then what God does in order to begin to see this word walked out when he says to Abraham that your people will be oppressed for 400 years. From Jacob comes Joseph. And Joseph is the one who will bring the people to Egypt. And in the midst of it, Joseph's not understanding this at all. But I'm trying to get you to see the backdrop of this so that you can understand there's a backdrop for your journey. There's a backdrop for your story. There's a backdrop for your situation right now. There's something going on that you don't really understand. There's something going on that you don't know about, but you just stay the course. You stay the course. Be not weary in well-doing, for in due season you will reap if you faint not. So in Genesis 39, you know the story of Joseph having the dream, and Joseph ends up taken by his brothers. He's thrown into a pit. Then he's sold into slavery. He gets from slavery to Potiphar's house. When he gets to Potiphar's house, the first thing that Potiphar recognizes is the favor that's on him. He recognizes there's something special about it. And when you live out of a place of kingdom perspective, wherever you show up, people are going to know there's something special about you. Wherever you show up, they're going to recognize there's, they can't put their finger on it, but they'll know there's something special about you. Not because you speak in tongues, not because you say praise the Lord. But when you understand it, I'm talking about as a believer now. You can walk into the situations. You can walk into places and people will look and say, there's something about him. I don't know what it is. There's something about him. It's just the look that's on him. They look like royalty. They look like they're blessed. You may be trying to figure out how you're going to pay the next bill, but you got that look on you. No, stay with me. Stay with me. Because oftentimes it'll precede you and pull you into it. And then before you know it, you be pointing. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. One of the things that was unique about Joseph, now I'm still talking about information, observation, implication, and application, because all these things are key. because Joseph was being messed over. But in the midst of all of it, he kept the right attitude. He kept the right attitude. So he shows up in Potiphar's house. Potiphar puts him over everything. And then we know how the story goes. Potiphar's wife lied on him. Now he's put into prison. And it would be easy to think right about then, okay, this ain't going well. And yet, God's moving him into position. God's moving him into position. God has a way of taking you and I some of the most unlikely ways to move us into position. Because now, Joseph, who was put in the pit, sold into slavery, end up in Potiphar's house, over everything in Potiphar's house except for the food. Then Potiphar's wife tried to seduce him, lied on him, said he tried to come on to her. Potiphar puts him in prison. But that's getting him closer to his place, because he's going to be the answer for all of Egypt and his family. So it says that in Genesis 29, it says that he was in prison. It says this, but the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness to him and gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. It says the chief jailer committed Joseph's charge, all the prisoners who were in jail, and whatever was done there, he was responsible for it. The chief jailer did not supervise anything under Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him. One of the reasons why we've got to manage the information, the observation, the implication, and the application is because sometimes when it doesn't add up, what God is doing is he's working in you and preparing you for a greater place, a greater level of authority and influence. So even while Joseph is in prison, now he's over everybody in prison. It speaks to the favor that's on his life and the leadership qualities that's operating in him. And the thing that I love about Joseph and the example of Joseph is that he never allowed himself to become bitter or down while he's walking it through. Joseph's favor was evident in every setting he found himself in. Joseph's favor was evident in every setting he found himself in. Now, I'm talking to those believers now who really are walking in kingdom. No matter where you show up, people are going to recognize favor on you. No matter where you show up, I don't care if it's the grocery store, I don't care if it's at the barber shop, the hairdresser, I don't care if it's in the mall, wherever it is, they're going to be able to recognize favor on your life. You can be in jeans, you can be in khakis, a t-shirt and shorts and flip-flops, doesn't matter what you got on, people are able to look and just see it. Now, what Joseph doesn't recognize is that God is using him to fulfill the word spoken to Abraham. So I'm saying sometimes you got to sit down and say, Lord, can you help me with the vantage point on this? Maybe I need to rewind some things generationally to understand what my season is about. Joseph's favor was evidenced in every setting he found himself in. So Joseph's in prison, but he's still not in the position yet that God's intended for him to be in. So what does God do? He connects some dots. In chapter 40, it says, Then it came about after these things, the cupbearer and the baker for the king offended their lord, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh was furious with his two officials, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker. So he put them in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard in the jail, the same place where Joseph was in prison. The same place where Joseph was in prison. Now, right about now, Joseph could just really be all messed up. Gifts all shut down. He ain't dreaming. He ain't thinking about dreaming. He ain't interpreting. He ain't thinking about any of that. But the thing about Joseph and the thing that I want to keep before us is he never lost sight of the dreams, and he never lost sight that somehow they would come to pass. Things hit our lives, and I'm wrapping this up now. Things hit your life. Things shift and they turn. But I want to leave you with this. Don't get so caught up in the circumstances that you are not aware of your surroundings. Do not get so caught up in the circumstances that you are not aware of your moment. Don't get so caught up in the circumstances that you're not aware of the moment that you are in. Jacob spoke of that when he said, surely the Lord is in this place and I did not know it. See, some things you don't get the do-over. Some things you will, some things you won't. You can't bank on that. But you can't allow yourself to get caught up in the circumstances because they're not what you thought they would be, that you missed the moment or you're unaware of your surroundings. Because what now Joseph is about to step into and engage is for now his deliverance and the deliverance of Israel. Because when the butler, cupbearer, and the baker show up, they have dreams. Who's down there that can interpret dreams? Joseph. So Joseph tells them the interpretation. They could have said, I'm through. You know, man, I've been trying to get this thing right. I ain't saying nothing to nobody. You had a dream, God bless you. Tell me your dream. He tells them the dream. He tells one, he says, you know, it ain't going to be good for you. Interpretation of your dream, you get your head cut off. Mm-hmm. Tells the other one, you're going to be restored. So what happened? Exactly what he says. The baker is the one that gets executed. The butler or the cupbearer gets restored back to his place of honor. When they are leaving, Joseph says, hey guys, tell them I'm down here and I ain't supposed to be down here. And I need you to let them know how I blessed you by interpreting your dreams. And they're like, okay, we got you. Let's say 2 years later. 2 years later. Now, why is it 2 years later? Is it because they forgot? Well, that's what the word says. The cupbearer, he forgot. But the larger backdrop is, it wasn't time yet. You see, there was no significance to Joseph coming out until there was a need for what he would be needed for. And so for 2 years, he sits there, and then the king has a dream. And the cupbearer says, I know a guy in prison. I met him a couple years ago who can interpret this dream. And that king calls for Joseph. Joseph comes, interprets the dream, talks about the 7 lean years, the 7 years of plenty. And the king says, who else could steward this but you? Sets him in the place of prominence. Famine hits. Now, Joseph's family is in need. And they come to Egypt only to meet and face Joseph. The same brothers that sold him, that put him in a pit, sold him into slavery, now are facing their deliverer in their brother. Now, stay with me, I'm done. But the key, the point I'm making is God set that up for the further fulfillment of his word spoken to Abraham. Mm-hmm. Because Jacob now says, go get dad, all of Israel, and bring them to Egypt. That's how they got to Egypt. We'll pick it up next week and talk a little bit about living in victory, living victoriously in an unshakable kingdom. My prayer is that what I'm sharing with you is stirring something deep in you.